get up here in John's lap for a second. When Mike first called out that number, I didn't think I knew that song. But it certainly turned that way. And I appreciate that Barry mentioned the fellowship lunch that we had. I think the fellowship and the food and the beauty was just about as nice as I've ever seen. And I know Velmer and Sherry would not want me to say their name, so I won't say their name. But the decorating of the annex for those first Sunday fellowships just makes it even nicer. So if you ever figure out who is secretly doing that, be sure and don't tell them that you know who it is. But we do really, really appreciate it. And I appreciate the way everyone went out of their way to greet our visitors today. That's the way we do it here, so I knew that's the way it would be done. The one couple and their two daughters, I'm sure most of you had an opportunity to meet them, the Purcells. They actually found out about us on the internet. They found our website, listened to some of the sermons, said, let's go and visit there. Well, he came by himself. Jamie came by himself. That was the day I conked out. But he stayed, and he said they would come back. Well, in correspondence with them, we added them to our Gmail list. Mary has asked permission to use some of our articles on her Facebook page. I said, you're welcome to do that. And they said today they would be back. I do not know their religious affiliation. I don't think they are members of the Churches of Christ, but if they keep coming back to visit, they will be members of Christ Church. And then you might have also seen another couple. The lady was a state trooper. Her husband, her fiance stayed through the service, and I did get to talk to him. She got called out on a wreck, so I said, please come back. He said, we will come back. And I don't know, but Doug and Sherry have a state trooper living fairly close to them, so maybe that's them, and maybe they will come back. But and we had other visitors, and we always treat our visitors so very, very well, and I'm so proud of our congregation for the love and affection that we show. You might be wanting to turn to Titus chapter 2. Titus chapter 2. You remember in our lesson this morning, those of you who were here, and most of you were, I said that you would need to read Titus chapter 2. In fact, I encourage you to read the entire short letter that Paul wrote to Titus. I'm not going to ask for a show of hands, but I'm sure that some of you did avail yourself of reading the book of Titus. Now, I'm going to read from verse 1 of Titus chapter 2 in just a moment, but let's give a little refresher course on the reasoning that Paul wrote to Titus. Now, Titus, to me, reminds me of Timothy. Timothy and Titus were young preachers, young Bible class teachers that Paul more or less took up under his arm to encourage them, to help them, to challenge them. You remember he sent Timothy to Ephesus. He sent Titus to Crete. And though I think both of those were very challenging, I think sending Titus to Crete was the most challenging of those two. Now, he warned them about a lot of things. He encouraged them. He told them, though this was the wording he gave to Timothy, I'll use the wording for Titus also, to set things in order. So they were given a tremendous responsibility in helping the fledgling congregations continue as Paul wanted them to continue, and of course that's the way Christ wanted them to continue also. Now, if you had a chance to read the entire epistle of Titus, you realize that there were still some problems there, and I'm going to summarize the problems by saying the problems were Judaizing teachers. Now, Judaizing teachers is really a catch-all phrase for Jews, primarily of Judea, primarily of Jerusalem, but elsewhere also, that really went around following Paul, following Paul's work, trying to cause problems. Now, they are in various factions. Some of them just challenged Paul. He was not an apostle. He was not a Christian. He was a persecutor of the church. Others, though, were trying to convince the young church to come back under Judaism. In other words, I mention quite often the Pharisees and the Sadducees and the Gnostics and the Nicolaitans and all of those. he wanted, these Judaizing teachers wanted Christianity to be one of those, and they're called denominations. Those groups are called denominations. They wanted them to be just one of the groups under Judaism. And it was very tempting because of the persecution that the early church was going through. And that's why the Spirit had a penman, I think, Paul, to write the epistle of Hebrews. Hebrews is written to encourage Jewish Christians not to go back to Judaism, to remain faithful to the Lord. And he goes to great lengths, and that's why I think it is Paul. He goes to great lengths explaining how Christ is superior even to Moses, and the new law is superior even to the old law, and all of these things. Heaven is far superior than Canaan. So that's why the book of Hebrews was written. But Titus is being warned about these Judaizing teachers also. Sometimes they're called false teachers, Judaizing teachers. Paul writes a great deal about them. They were even in existence in Jesus' day. Peter, James, Jude also write a little bit about these false teachers, but primarily Paul. All right, we're in Titus chapter 2. But as for you, speak, in other translations say teach, and in this particular case, I think teach probably captures what Paul really wants. As for you, Titus, teach the things which are proper for sound doctrine. And this is the proper things for sound doctrine. That the older men be serious or sober, reverent, temperate, sound in faith, sound in love, sound in patience. The older women likewise, that they be reverent in behavior, not slanderers, not given to much wine, teachers of good things, that they also admonish or encourage the young women to love their husbands, to love their children, to be discreet, chaste, homemakers, good, obedient to their own husbands, that the word of God may not be blasphemed. And of course, that means spoken against. And in one translation I found where it is translated, that the word of God may not be spoken against. We continue. Likewise, exhort the young men to be sober-minded in all things, showing themselves to be a pattern of good works. That word pattern comes from the Greek word tupos. It's like a blueprint. It's like the ladies using a dress pattern. That's what the New Testament is. It's a pattern of good works in doctrine, showing integrity, reverence, incorruptibility, cannot be corrupted, sound speech that cannot be condemned, that one who is an opponent, and I found the translation that used the word enemy, an enemy of the church, may be ashamed, having nothing to evil to say to you. I think he's talking about those false teachers, those Judaizing teachers. Skip down to 11. For the grace of God that brings salvation has appeared to all men, brethren, if you think like I do, that grace of God that has appeared to all men is Jesus. The grace of God that has appeared to all men brings salvation, teaching us that denying ungodliness and worldly lusts, we should live soberly, righteously, and godly in this present age, looking for the blessed hope and glorious appearing of our great God and Savior Jesus Christ, who gave himself for us that he might redeem us from every lawless deed and purify for himself his own special people. Peculiar people, the King James says. Peculiar because we are zealous of good works. Speak these things, exhort and rebuke with all authority. Let no one despise you. My lesson tonight is not negative in any way. In fact, let me give you the real title of the lesson: God's Timeless Truths That We All Need. There's nothing negative about that at all. But my introduction is going to be about these Judaizing teachers, these false teachers. So don't let the negativity of my introduction spoil the positivity of my lesson. False teachers. Brethren, I suppose as long as there has been a church, or the church, there has been false teachers. They were in Jesus' day. They followed him around from city to city, town to town, village to village, hamlet to hamlet. They followed him everywhere with the sole purpose of causing him trouble. Now, we single out the Sadducees, the Pharisees, especially the rulers of the temple, the rulers of the people. For the most part, all of those different S-E-C-T-S, those sects, all of those religious groups were against Jesus. In fact, that's what drew those groups together, was their hatred of Jesus. So false teachers is nothing new to the church. Now, once the church was established and the apostles, because of the Christians, because of the persecution, went everywhere preaching the word, so did those false teachers. They followed the church everywhere. Now, it's obvious why that happened. This is a result of Satan's hatred of the church. If Satan could not keep Jesus off the cross and in the grave, then he has lost the war. You remember Jesus said, "I will build my church, and even the gates of hell will not prevail against it." If Satan could have kept Jesus off the cross, or if he could have kept him in the grave, you and I would still be lost. But since Jesus rose from the grave by the power of the Father, then he needs to attack us. He can't beat Jesus. He certainly can't beat God. So he's going to attack us. The way he attacks Christ today is by attacking the church. That's the way it was then. That's the way it is today. And the gist of Paul's letter to Titus is, this is going to happen. Be ready for it. Now, brethren, this letter was written 1900, 2000 years ago. But if the Apostle Paul was still alive today, and if the Spirit still inspired men as he did then, it wouldn't surprise me at all if Paul wouldn't write a letter to the Port Lavaca Church of Christ saying, be careful. There are false teachers inside and outside the church. You need to be on guard. You can't let anyone despise you. You need to keep your guard up, because false teachers were there then. False teachers are here today. Now, today there is an ever-growing list of individuals who, under the guise of Christianity, are making themselves famous and rich and powerful. Now, most of you have heard me preach for a long, long time. I don't believe in calling names. I won't be calling names tonight. But there was a man who did documentaries. I can't say the word right now. Who worked for the LA Times. I'm sorry, the New York Times. And he wrote an article in 2001 based on the research that he had done by following one of these televangelists around for 2 years. Now, in his documentary, he said that he wanted to prove the existence of miracles. That's why he was following him around. And he would later say in his documentary, if I could, I would voice from the highest hills that miracles are available through this particular preacher. But after 2 years, he came out saying, I just can't do it. You know, brethren, if we look at some who are in the ministry profession, there's a difference between a gospel preacher and some who are in a ministry profession. They fill buildings. They fill stadiums. They have overflow crowds. They sell books, millions and millions of copies of books. They have television ministries and internet ministries and all kinds of ministries. And they promise to do things that they simply cannot do. Now, maybe that's my opinion. Maybe if I followed around one of these guys for a couple of years, I would change my opinion. But I just don't think so. And this documentarian said at the end, he said, because of what he claims to do and cannot do, he is doing more harm to Christianity than all the atheists in the world combined. Now, brethren, I have to agree with that. That's what we call false teaching. That's what the Bible calls false teaching. And that's what Paul was warning Titus to be aware of. They are there. We need to be ready for it. We need to be on guard. Now, how do we counterattack false teaching? With truth teaching. That was our lesson this morning. We need to understand the truth. We need to recognize the truth. We need to live the truth, because people aren't going to be listening to our words nearly as much as they look at our lives. And if we're talking the talk but not walking the walk, we're going to be like that preacher we mentioned a moment ago. We'll do more harm to the church than we do good. Now, in this passage, Paul is giving instruction to Titus. Part of the instruction is to combat false teachers. He says, speak or teach the things which are appropriate or proper for sound doctrine. Verse 15, these are the things you should teach. These things that Paul mentions are the things that he should teach. Now, to understand the context of this message, we needed to review what Paul's reasoning was for sending Titus to Crete and for encouraging him in this. And brethren, we are in the world, but we are not of the world. It's just like God has sent us to Port Lavaca to represent Jesus and his church where we are, Port Lavaca. So if Paul is encouraging Titus along these lines, we need to allow him to be encouraging to us also. He was to set things in order. Brethren, things need to be in order. Now, if you did read today, you will notice what I'm about to tell you. Paul is telling him to look inside, not necessarily outside, for this encouragement. This is an internal problem. This needs to be handled internally. But it is vital that he says that the truth is what must be taught. So the answer for false teaching today is the same as it was then. We need to know the truth. We need to speak the truth. We need to teach the truth. We need to live the truth. Now, is that going to make us popular per se? No. In fact, it's going to make us unpopular, because the Bible to us takes precedence over everything else. And so many others in the world think that their feelings takes precedence over that. But now to the positivity of my lesson. God's timeless truths that we all need to hear. Number one, we must teach the truth concerning Christian living. If you've known me for a long time, you know I was raised in the church. I was raised in this congregation. It was just not condoned, it was not encouraged, it was not acceptable for us as teenage boys, and I'm speaking for me and for Ken and for Cecil Schaefer and Robert Mickle Jr., it was just not condoned, encouraged, or accepted that we would accept the lifestyle of the world. And if someone in the congregation saw me doing something in the world that my parents didn't know about, they didn't even worry about telling my parents. They told me about it. I remember one time I had gone to a party and I did not know there was going to be dancing there. It got back to Alan Brown that I had attended a party where there was dancing. Well, Alan, if you knew Alan, didn't go to my folks. He came to me. He said, "Why were you there?" I said, "Well, I was invited." "Were you dancing?" And no, I wasn't. "Were you condoning the actions by staying there?" And he had me then. Brethren, we need to realize we are representing Christ at all times. We need to positively show that Christian living is what it is all about. And he goes into four different areas: the older men, the women, the younger women, and the men. He begins with the men who are of advanced age. He uses the word older. I'm not going to use the word older because I fall into that category. So he's talking first of all to men who are of advanced age. He says that we need to be temperate. We need to understand how fragile life really is. We need to understand how our responsibility is, not only to myself, my wife, my children, but everyone else in whom I come in contact with. He says we more mature men need to be worthy of respect. I remember a number of years ago, I either read an article or heard a preacher say, if you want to be respected, you need to be a respectable person. That's what Paul is saying. We need to be men who can be respected. We need to be self-controlled. We need to abound in faith. We need to be abounding in love. We need to be abounding in endurance. Now, I thought, how can he be talking to not so young men and talk about endurance? He's talking spiritually speaking. We need to be consistent, endurance in a spiritual matter. Now, we older men want to be relevant. To be relevant, we must be reverent. We want to be respected, therefore we must be respectable. We have to show Christian maturity. Then there are expectations for mature women. Why some of these are worded the way they are, I really don't know. I could make a joke of it, but it's not a joke. I'll just say it the way Paul does. Women need to be in control of their words. Why that's not mentioned to men, I don't know, because I think men have a harder problem controlling their words than do women. But women need to be in control of their words. They also need to be temperate. They also need to be worthy of respect. And the easiest way to lose respect is to lose control of your words. That's the easiest way. You know the old saying, sticks and stones can break our bones, but words can never hurt us? That's just not true. Sticks and stones can break our bones, but we can hurt each other with words even more deeply and more harmingly than we can with sticks and stones. They're also, the more mature women are also given charge to the younger women. Now, do you think, and I think it would be fine, but do you think Paul is talking about the more mature women having a class for younger women? That would be fine. But what he's talking about is your example. That's the way older women are to teach. More mature women, that's the way they are to teach the younger women. And what do they teach them? Well, they teach them how to love their husbands by the way the older women love their husbands. They teach to love their children like the older women love their children. They teach by example. Brethren, all of this, the older men, the older women, it's all about example. And then there are some expectations for the younger women. They are to learn from that example. And I think between the lines here, Paul is also saying, if the younger women have a problem being a young woman, they need to go to the older women saying, I know you've been through something like this. Help me as I love my husband. Help me as I raise my children. Help me as I am chaste and known as respectable and pure in the community. Help me do that. So we're following the example, and if we need help, the ladies can seek that help from their older women. Then there is expectation for the younger men. And again, what we're to do is we're to pattern our life after the more mature men, the more respectable men. I speak for everyone who has grown up in this congregation. This congregation has been blessed beyond measure with respectable, older men and respectable older women that we can pattern our life after. I'm not going to even begin to list all of the people that I idolized when I was young. I idolized them because they were living Christ before my eyes. And now that it's my generation, I'm challenging you of my generation. We need to be someone, we need to live a life that these younger people say, I want to grow up and be like that man. I want to grow up and be like that woman. And then they, in turn, will be the older at some point, and they will need to be that as well. Now, isn't it also true, though, that Christianity is in direct contrast to the lifestyles we see in the world? Therefore, we need to be consistent in our lives. Second, we must teach the truth concerning divine authority. Brethren, where there is no authority, there is chaos. Now, we can see that in the world. We can see that in politics. We can see that in society. We can see that in the home. We need to see it in the church also. Things need to be, must be done decently and in order. The first thing that ever happened that we know of, I'm sure things happened before, the first thing we ever know of is where God established himself as the ultimate authority. Genesis 1:1, in the beginning, God. It's been all downhill since then. In the beginning, God. We must submit to that authority. Now we'll go to the conclusion. Look at verse 15. These are the things then that we should teach. Not only do we need to teach the truth about Christian living, not only do we need to teach the truth about divine authority, but we need to teach the truth about Jesus's second coming. Verse 13, we wait for the blessed hope and appearing and the glory of our great God and Savior, Jesus Christ. Brethren, that blessed hope is designed to change our lives. Because of that blessed hope, we live according to the precepts of the Bible. Now, if we do not have hope, it's because we do not have Jesus. But that hope must change our lives. It must change the way we look. I'm not talking about our features, but the way we look to the world, the way we sound, the way we act. We are representing Jesus in our lives. Too many times, we just can't tell a Christian whether he's a worldly person or a Christ-like person. We need to talk the talk, but we need to walk the walk as well. So Paul wanted the church in Crete to know what Christianity was all about. He wanted them to give the appearance of Christ, not facially, but he wanted people to see Christ living in those Christians. He commissioned Titus, a young man, to teach them about that. And the way he taught, first of all, was by example. He commissioned our older men to be an example to the younger men. He commissioned our older women to be an example to the younger women. And in all things, we have to work together for the Lord. Why? Because he's coming again. John 14, I used it this morning. Jesus said, I will come again and receive you unto myself. Brethren, Jesus promised he's coming back. And you know what? He's coming back. And we need to be ready. If the song was in our songbook, I was going to get Mike to lead. There's a great day coming. A great day coming. There's a great day coming by and by. And the end of that song says, are you ready for that day to come? It's not in our book. And we won't be thinking of it when we sing this song. But we need to be ready for the judgment day. Perhaps tonight, though I did not mention first principles, there might be someone who needs to be baptized. Or if for any other reason anyone needs to respond, please respond. Jesus is the one that calls. Won't you come as we stand together?